Good morning and welcome along to Tip Today. We have another packed show in store for you this morning. We have a chat with David Doran about his now former colleague's decision to decouple himself from Sinn Féin. It's a first for the Premier as Tipperary Festival Science gets into full swing. We launched a very special campaign to try and ensure it's a happy Christmas for all children across the Premier County, and we need your help. Also, take a listen to this.
But we're hoping to have a show, and we're hoping to make like seasons and all, like EastEnders and things like that.
Right, like a series of programs. Okay. Yeah. And do you know what it's going to be about yet?
Well, it's we start off with he got a Darth Vader thing. Okay. It's like a teddy thing, and we used to put a mask on it, so we turn it into somebody else, and we used that as a character in it.
Okay.
So it'd be like comedy and adventures.
And we'll hear more from those incredible young gentlemen a little later on in the show. Now, Trudy is producing today. She's by the phones on 1800 938 007. You can text on 083 311 3311. Of course, you can email tiptoday@tipfm.com. Now, a lovely prize for you today. We have a hamper to give away. In association with O'Sullivan's Pharmacy in Feathert, which is celebrating 100 years in business. So it's a lovely hamper for you today. It's based on your interaction with us by text. Now, you can join in the conversations. You can get something off your chest, whatever it is. But do give me a full name and an address when you're texting so that we can enter you properly into our competition. Now, as you know, a fresh appeal for missing Tipperary man Stephen Cullinan was launched by his family this weekend. Stephen is a 25-year-old son of North Tipperary IFA chairman Tim Cullinan, a regular contributor to this programme. And we at Tip FM would like to reiterate the family's appeal that if anybody has information on Stephen, that they would get in touch with their local Garda station. And indeed, Stephen's family would like him to get in touch just to say that he is okay. His last known location was around Stephen's Green in Dublin. And that Garda confidential line is 1800 666 6111. So it's 1800 666 111 if you can help out at all. Let's have a look at what's making headlines today. Over 200 people have been killed and more than 1,000 injured after a 7.3 magnitude earthquake hit the Iraq-Iran border. Most of those killed were on the Iranian side, and officials say more deaths are expected. Fianna Fáil claims the government has failed to help businesses in Tipperary who suffered losses after Storm Ophelia. It's believed the government has let down many horticultural businesses who do not have a support scheme to protect jobs. And the family of a missing Irish woman in France has confirmed her body has been found. Authorities say that Emer Noonan died after an accidental fall while out running. As you know, last week we spoke about Councillor Seamie Morris and him announcing that he was walking away from Sinn Féin. Well, the North Tipperary representative said that due process had not been followed to resolve his formal complaint to the party in regard to a number of serious, unfounded and untruthful allegations made by rogue elements in the party. As you know, he's not the first Sinn Féin councillor to speak out about problems within the party, including accusations of bullying. I'm joined on the line now by Councillor David Doran of Sinn Féin. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Fran.
First of all, could I get your reaction to Seamus deciding to leave Sinn Féin behind?
Sure, Fran. Look, could I just preface my remarks by wishing Seamie and, I mean, his wife Denise and his family, and indeed the wider Morris family, the very best for the future. I mean, we're colleagues a long time, and I hope we would remain so inside and outside of politics. Fran, myself and Seamie go back a long way. We were elected the same day back in June 2004, and it was a proud day for our respective families in our areas. And you know, he served as mayor of Nina on two occasions, and he made a breakthrough for us in the county council back in 2009. So he was a standard bearer for the party in the general election on three occasions back in 2007, which I had the privilege of being his director of elections, in 2011 and 16. So he's well respected, friend, and got around Turles, and I've been on the doors with him and in this community. So it is a major loss for us. There's no doubt doubt about that.
And if he was such an asset to the party, David, how was he allowed, how did the whole debacle be allowed to get to where it did?
I don't know, friend, to be honest. I mean, you know, as you can appreciate as well, there is, and I think it was flagged in your show, there's some legal wranglings going on as well at the moment, but it's very regrettable that it was let get to this, but, you know, that's where it's at now, and it's a very, it's a sad day, you know, and...
Whenever Shamie spoke to me, he mentioned Catherine Carey, and indeed your own name coming up as well, as also having some difficulties within the party. is that fair to say, David?
It is, Fran, and I'm glad to get an opportunity to speak on that as well, because, you know, so this whole story broke, and I think it was last June I spoke with you when this story broke. There was a statement went out from the Ciara counter, and it was as if that the whole of Tipperary membership had looked for Shamie to be expelled, and I'm chairman of our coming here to Robertham and coming to Turles, and, you know, we weren't consulted on that, and you know, there was a lot of people felt slighted on that, and I had a duty to them as well, and you know, that's where that emanated from, when there was a letter of complaint within it. But there was organisational issues within my own area, and, you know, I think that's been dealt with. I met with party officials as late as last Friday week, and I feel it has been dealt with, and we're getting a fair hearing. But this whole issue of bullying seems to be my issue, and maybe Catherine can speak for herself, seems to be married in with the whole bullying thing. And
were you bullied, David?
Never, Fran, and I want to say that categorically today. I'm a member of the party 23 years. I'm elected representative for the party for 14 years, and never once did I experience bullying. Just to say that as well, Fran, a lot of members that I would know for many, many years, many people that had, you know, been on the doors with me and helped me out in elections and had postered with me and campaigned with me, feel very aggrieved that this bullying is being bandied about very much, and that you'd swear that there was a big culture of bullying within the party. I know definitely there's issues there when you have people like the calibre of Shamie saying about bullying other colleagues around the country, like you've seen it in other parties, that it's a problem, obviously, for the party if that's been said and that's about, but I certainly have never witnessed it in my time.
Well, I don't have to tell you that, you know, a number of members of Sinn Féin have spoken out about bullying, some of them even resigning from the party as well. While you weren't bullied yourself, have you witnessed bullying within the party?
No, I have not, Fran, and it's something I would take very, very seriously. And even in my own role at work, I'm a supervisor in work, and if somebody came to me and mentioned about bullying, I think it's something that you would take very, very seriously. And, you know, of course I haven't experienced it or witnessed it, if anybody came to, or nobody had come to me about it either. But to having that said, anyone that says that there were bullied, I wouldn't doubt them. You know, that there's a process for that to be dealt with, and obviously Shamie didn't feel that it was being taken serious enough, and I know there's stuff going on there in a legal aspect, but
is Sinn Féin and Tipperary very divided in that, you know, yourself and Catherine, Shamie, were you on one side and some of the other councillors were on another side? Is it?
No, Fran, I think just to explain it to you that when the I definitely was put out when the statement went out at that time, and you know, I felt that our comment was some way put out, and we weren't being wasn't being cohesive, but I think that's been addressed. And you know, it's like in any political party, in any walk of life, there's going to be differences of opinion. We're the fastest growing party in the island of Ireland, and you know, you're going to have new members in with new ideas, and it's like everything. But it's a pity some of the dirty linen was washed in public, as it were, and I think that's been addressed. But you know, definitely, I mean,
is it the case that some members of the Corlach County are traditional nationalists and might not see eye to eye with maybe your view of where Sinn Féin should be going for the future?
Well, I don't know. I would consider myself as a traditionalist, and you know, of the old Republican values, and I suppose there is diverse opinions. You have it in all parties, Fran, but you know, and there definitely was issues here locally, but benign enough that I would feel that
What kind of issues?
Organisation. Well, Fran, to be fair, I will be issuing a comprehensive statement when the review is completed, but you know, it's not completed yet, but I will be hopeful enough that maybe these weren't to be near it at all, only for what I told you when it came out there. But I think it's important that when you have issues that maybe some way, you know, that when you haven't a happy or culture within the party, I think it's important to speak out and try and get them dealt with.
You see, there's a lot of people out there, David, I don't have to tell you, a lot of people out there that would like for this sort of thing to, you know, be brought out in the public for Sinn Féin, to knock Sinn Féin. But some of that is your own fault, because there seems to be, is there a culture of secrecy as well? And it's all very mysterious. I mean, in terms of what the Corlach Counter does as opposed to the Cumann and your attendance there and how you get on with them, you know, is that all very mysterious?
I wouldn't say a mysterious fan, really. You know, I suppose when I joined the party many, many years ago, the Cumann was paramount, and I suppose it still would be to me. But there is structures there. When, you know, we amalgamated as Corlach Counter, there was South Tipperary, the Dáil Éireann one way.
Was that part of the problem, was it?
Certainly. Certainly, different ways of looking at things. And, yeah. and that's only a couple of years ago. They can be ironed out, Fran. And I think it's important that we are. It's a pity that some of this stuff went out into the public. Definitely, I wouldn't see any form of secrecy. I suppose, like any political party, we all have our own views. And when you sign up as a member, you go in as a member, and you'd like to have that, you would have that kind of, not secrecy, but you could speak freely as colleagues and comrades, and to have your political viewpoint in that setting. And I think that would be fair to all political parties across the
Thinking, though, I mean, if Seamus was so profoundly upset about what happened to him, I mean, you're a friend of his, so I'm sure you would appreciate that he's not exaggerating that, or you know, so if you saw that happening, it must affect your role within Sinn Féin as well.
Well, I didn't, Fran, I just want to reiterate, I never seen or witnessed bullying, but of course I can see...
Well, I mean, if Seamus says that to you, I'm sure you believe him.
Of course I can see how upset... Seamus resigned, Fran, from the party, and, you know, the Morris family are long associated with republicanism here in Tipperary, and he didn't take that lightly, and of course I wouldn't anyway... Take from that. I'm only giving you my perspective, Fran, and as I said, we're colleagues a long time, and I hope we remain so outside of politics. But I will be very much wedded to the party as much as I ever was, and believe very much in the party, and very proud to serve in a
Would you look to the general election for me? Because, of course, there was Seamus representing Sinn Féin last time round. What's going to happen this time? I mean, are you throwing your hat in the ring?
I would hope to, Fran. Yeah, I would hope to. I definitely think that now is the time to really regroup and refocus, to have a coherent political force in the county. And I think that to have a TD for Tipperary, for a Sinn Féin TD, is definitely a main objective for me anyway. And, you know, we have...
And you think you're that person, David?
Well, look, Fran, I wouldn't be burning to be the candidate, but I would very much like to be. But what I would be burning what I would feel very strongly about is that Sinn Féin has a TD representing the affairs of people in Tipperary in the next Dáil. But if I would be putting my name forward, and if I was selected by the... I don't know what way it will go now with the way things are with the Corlach Counter, but I would be very hopeful that things will be resolved and that we'd all come out of this as stronger. And I think that could be the case. And yes, I would be honoured, very much honoured, to serve the people of Tipperary as a Sinn Féin.
And where the Corlach Counter is concerned, is that still active now?
No, Fran, it's not. It's not after a meeting.
It's been stood down, has it?
Not so much. Well, call it what you like. We won't be meeting until after Christmas. But the Cumann and the structures and everything is going ahead the same. But they won't be meeting. I think that's to be fair to everyone, Fran, that when the review was going on, that all these issues would be looked at. And I think that's good, because it shows that the party headquarters is looking at what's going on, looking at us as maybe having the prospect of having a candidate in the next election.
Right. It also shows a very divided structure in the county for Sinn Féin, isn't it?
Well, no, it's one Charlie councillor now representing the whole county. It's going to take a while to bend down, and I suppose that's why the review is in, is because the decision. But that happens in all political parties, Fran, you know. Mm. It certainly does. And,
all right, but in the meantime, you'd like to throw your hat in the ring anyway.
Please God, Fran, and look, the main thing is that we would have be united and maybe come out of this with a Sinn Féin TD for Tipperary and Dáil Éireann next on, and I think that would be a very, very good thing.
David, thanks for talking to us today. That's Councillor David Doran there of Sinn Féin. 1800-938-007. You can text on 083-311-3311. Of course, we have that marvellous hamper as our prize today based on your interaction with us by text. All right, let's take a break and we'll be back with some of our listeners.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP today, 1800-938-007. That text number is 083-311-3311. Well, the government has published the 2017 finance bill containing 78 sections, the majority of which implemented the changes announced in budget 2018. And Deputy Matty McGrath joins me online now. Good morning to you, Matty.
Morning, Brian.
You have some issues with this, Matty.
One had issues, a number of issues on budget night, and Deputy Michael Fitzmaurice and myself tried to put down amendments, and we did put down amendments on the floor, but unfortunately they were voted down. And they were in particular in relation to the changes to stamp duty. The government were estimating that they're going to get in about 390 million, you know, stamp duty. And it's a very dangerous place to go because we saw what happened to this economy over stamp duty, you know, and the luxurious kind of amount of stamp duty that rolled in over, you know, the boom and the crash then that occurred and the difficulty. So, especially, I think one came there was very mean. We felt people didn't know it. And many businesses in Tipperary and farmers, small farmers and businesses were caught in deals that they had, you know, where they had tried to expand their farm, they had a bit of land purchased, shopkeepers selling or buying, people in towns with businesses that have failed trying to get people to come in to redo in our towns. In the middle of processes, you know, and deals done and shook hands, as I said, maybe spit in the wrist and you're the deal done in good faith, but you were delayed either with auctioneers or with solicitors or with getting the finance or financing. So there was a hammer blow there where it went from 2%, they put the interest, the stamp duty up to 6% overnight. But you had your accounts submitted to the bank with great difficulty. You might have got the funding for the price of the land, including the fees and whatever else. And then you were hit with, it depends on the value of the property, you were hit with a whammy of 4% extra, which you had to try and finance and get and pay in tax that you weren't expecting. So we put amendments down on the finance bill that we do this incrementally, which was voted down right at the budget. Support was our amendment. If it did, we'd have beaten it. We didn't put down the amendments where from 200,000 in value up to 400,000, that it would be 3%. And then we, from 400,000 to 600,000, that it would be at 3%. But then after 600,000, fine, level be the 6% intact. So we had costing, there was about 250 million. And their estimation, the department's estimation, we didn't accept that figure either. But anyway, we debated it thoroughly at length and late on Thursday evening in the finance bill. And we withdrew one of them because it was going to be voted down. Mm. The other one was voted down by the Fianna Fáil and by the government as well at the finance bill. And then we withdrew one with the intention of resubmitting it at Dáil stage when it goes back into the chamber. We also had a very important one, which I feel, and Deputy Fitzmaurice field, we had where the vulture funds, we know the havoc that they're wreaking on our country, where they come in and buy properties here, whether it could be your property or mine or whoever, a distressed property, whether it's a home, whether it's a business, or whether it's a farm. And where they are buying the properties at maybe 15 up to 30% of the value of them, that's most of them are going for, some as low as 15, many of them 20, some up to 30. Where they happen to offer that to the householder or the farmer or the business person, yet the same rate, which they don't do. I have businesses attended the High Court only last week with a business, a big farm in Wexford, and not a big, fairly big farm, and they won't offer it to the farmer. The farmers can come up with the money, or the homeowner or business person, the same amount of money, 50, 60, 30, 40, 50% of it, and even 70% of it, but they won't offer it to them. So we felt that in those cases, in order to tackle the vulture funds, which are totally unhindered, what they do, that there should be a 50% surcharge, and we would make a fortune for the government, for the taxpayers, for the revenue, for the coffers, because they're getting away scot-free. They're wreaking havoc on our country, and they're laughing all the way to the bank.
And why do you think there isn't an appetite to do something about that?
Well, I had this debate with you last year when I was on. There's not an appetite. I don't know. There's no real legislation governing. I've been in the High Court countless times. There's no defence for the unfortunate household or business person or family in the High Court. They're not getting justice in the courts. The system is all skewed in favour of the big vulture funds and the banks. I do there as well. I don't know, Fran. I just can't get my head around it. It's very, very disappointing. We're coming up to the celebration of the War of Independence, and this has to change, and there's no appetite in the big parties to change it. None whatsoever.
We're now the Republic of Opportunity, as we keep hearing, but you'd wonder where that opportunity is. Can you tell me, what do you do when you bring something up like these amendments and stuff? Do you court support? Is that what happens for an independent like yourself?
Yes, but we got good support, in fairness. We had independent supporters. We had Sinn Féin supporters. But unusual, it's my first time really getting into the nitty-gritty. I'm not on the finance bill, so I can't vote, even though I had amendments down, and neither could Deputy Liz Morris. But as I said, we could have the vote won if all the opposition backed us. But as I said, Michael McGrath just said to me, Matty, I can't support you because we do, it's an election, if they lose their vote in the finance bill. And I can understand that. But look, how are we going to change the system? How are we going to get fairness? How are we going to get the people? There are many people caught there. And if another added issue, friend, in there, if they, you know, with the change of stamp duty, when they can't close the deal before the end of the financial year, which is passed, for them, they're going to be now liable for tax and penalties and interest from revenue. They can't get these stamped, and they're going to be, by something totally outside their control, they're going to be become tax defaulters. You know, which is very, very unfair. But the vulture funds is the issue that we have to really, really deal with, because they're buying it. Look at NAMA, the people who need the NAMA, back in business again. The whole thing is so murky and so outrageously, you know, unfair. And as I said, the vulture funds.
Does it all come back to, and I mean, I'm sure I'm boring you by saying this at this stage, but like, does it all come back to you being inside the tent, being out, as opposed to the position that you're in now? I mean, if you took the option of being part of this government, surely there'd be far more options and you'd be more listened to as well.
No, sir, I brought this up in the programme for government. This is obviously the nose of my face, the wrongs that have been perpetrated on the people. The banks, I'm like a bad writer talking about what's going on, and we've seen it now, thankfully. We were like pariahs a couple of years ago down in the four courts.
I know, but you can't do anything about it, Matty, you know.
But, sir, there's not a will. We will do about it. The sooner the people see what's going on, that the big parties aren't serving their interests. They're serving the interests of the big people, and not the ordinary people. The people that go to work every day and get up early in the morning, as Jesus likes to call Republican Opportunities, a spin. You have Deputy Donnelly on there, it's spin and it's image. But there's real hardship and there's real areas here. I also, as I said, for years was on about increasing the price of the alcohol and you know, off license and supermarkets and all that. Finally, I think it's going to be done. So it happens. I have submissions on that for the last 7 years.
Even though I have my own reservations on that doing any good whatsoever, Matthew, to be honest with you.
Well, I feel sorry. No, I feel sorry for you know, somebody trying to recover, a friend, from an alcohol addiction. And he goes in for a cup of petrol, or goes in for a Pando, and his wine bottle's hitting him in the face the minute he goes in. You can make a choice not to go into the pub or into the hotel or whatever. You know what I mean? Alcohol, you know, is flowing, as the fellow says, but something has to be done. Again, the big supermarkets are running riot here, and you can see them. The big supermarkets, I'm not talking about the smaller supermarkets, you've one day and run drum, an excellent store, gives huge employment. To convert that shop now to the way they want to convert it would cost 70,000 to 80,000, lose employment, an extra person in the till. It's like everything. There's no understanding of how those small businesses have built and grown. And how
speaking of no understanding, what did you make from the Fine Gael conference? Almost a denial about homelessness, almost, you know, living in fear, making a comparison with other countries and stuff, as if to say, actually, look, it's an acceptable amount of homelessness.
And I hear the spinning machine on in Morning Ireland again, trying to justify that out there. Look, one person, you know, I know homeless would never be sorted, but I mean, this is the problem with the spin, the 5 million in the budget that were put, taken out to pay for this spinning machine. That's not necessary. We've enough of spin doctors and spin people in radio. So, but look, that's the path you're dealing with. They're a party of the I won't say the elite, but they are almost the elite. And when they went tackle, like Minister for Health, Tisha Bradcliffe said in the door 2 weeks ago, he wasn't aware of the extent of the banking, you know, the banking begging of the people. He was. He had to, written to him. I have correspondence to hand him this week. It was written to him in 2009 when he was a member of not the Finance Committee, but the Economics and Strategy Committee, and that was written to him at that stage. They went, no, and Minister Noonan, who I get on very well with, he just closed his eyes to the problem and said, don't bring those problems to me. Or people being
so was he untruthful with his answer to that then?
Yes. Well, it's again, it's the semantics. I wasn't on the Finance Committee, but I was on there. My information was that he was. And understand it's not the Finance Committee, it's the Regulatory Authority, which is more important. The Finance and Regulatory Authority Committee, which is more important, actually. There's no regulation when it comes to the big bankers. We see the Paradise Papers. I raised that with them in the door last week again. So, look, I mean, the ordinary person is not getting bang for the buck. That's the same with home. That's the same with the HSC, same with the health. We're now busing people. I'd like to come on tomorrow and talk to you about it with the European Directive. We're busing people you know, that want to go to Belfast to get their treatment within 25 days, not languishing for 4 years on a list. I mean, it can be done up in King's Inn Hospital in Belfast by appointment, but it'll be done between 25 days. We have to pay up front, but you get the money back within 5 weeks from the HSE budget. But as regards the finance bill, and we're going back into the Dáil again, the floor of the Dáil in the coming weeks, and we're going to put down one of those amendments against Whitfield, because it's
it's not going to go through.
Well, we'll get much more support there for it, because all the opposition will vote for it. All the opposition will vote for it. Why wouldn't they? So, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
But support of Fianna Fáil, it just won't happen, you know.
Well, if they abstain or whatever, that's my point I'm trying to make to you. But, I mean, they have been in government. I was there with them. I mean, for many years, this culture has grown up of looking after the elite, looking after the big people, and to hell with the little people. And it's not just acceptable.
Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Did you ever fancy building bridges like Leonardo da Vinci or learning more about electrical circuits or engineering? Well, now you can do so at the very first Tipperary Festival of Science, which was launched this week at Mary Eye College and St. Patrick's Campus in Thurles. And to talk to me about this, I'm joined in the studio now by Dr. Maeve Liston, who is Director of Enterprise and Community Engagement and indeed a senior lecturer in science education at MIC. Maeve, it's good to see you. Thanks very much indeed for coming into us. Tell us about the genesis of this. How did this come about?
Well, I suppose if we go back a small bit, so Mary Michael College is located in Limerick City. So for the last number of years, myself and colleagues in LIT and UL have developed the Limerick Festival of the Science. So we're engaging children from primaries up to second level students in science and with their teachers and the general public. Since June 2016, then St. Patrick's College in Thurles was actually incorporated into Mary Immaculate College. So I was thinking, wow, this is a great opportunity for children and adults as well to engage maybe in science in Tipperary. So I thought the idea, maybe we should have a Tipperary Festival of Science. If we're having festivals of science all around the country, why can't we do it in Tipperary?
Absolutely, right. Yeah. And that's just what you're going to do. You're doing so in a very attractive sort of a way, though, and almost a fun way in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's, I think, for children and for adults, you have to engage them in a real kind of, with everyday materials, where it really inspire them. And the only way to do that is to excite them about science. So Science Foundation Ireland and Science Week all across the country, we're trying to engage children and adults with science in a really, really fun, inspiring way. So we want them to use everyday materials, look at how science actually is incorporated into their everyday life, maybe look at possible careers that they might go into. But it's just also about maybe igniting the spark. So maybe just kind of asking why, maybe looking at things and questioning things and saying, well, I can actually problem solve and I can be a critical thinker too.
Because we need a lot more scientists and we need a lot more students of science, don't we?
We do. Well, you know, you might have heard this STEM.
Yes.
So the STEM area is science, technology, engineering and maths. And I suppose they're all incorporated. So if you're a scientist, you're working with maths, technology. So yes, there's a huge amount amount of jobs available in all those areas, and we need graduates and we need people to actually take an interest in them and actually go into these subject areas, because it's a growing area in Ireland, and we need people.
Tell me about the Festival of Science then. Give us some of the highlights that are happening.
Okay, well, I suppose when we were designing it, we made sure that we kind of hit three different areas. So during the weekdays, we are inviting schools and teachers into Mary Eye and LIT, and actually into local libraries, for example, in Nina and in Turles. So they're actually going to engage with interactive hands-on workshops. So it's not talks. That's most important. We want them actually to engage in science.
Yes.
So that was the very first thing we designed. The second thing we wanted to do was actually hit adults. So we've specifically talks and workshops for adults then throughout the week. And also then we want to hit families.
Mm-hmm.
So during the week, for example, with Faroga here in Nina, we're going to work with children, but also inviting their parents as well in the evening time to, again, do, you know, where we're talking about STEM challenges, engineering challenges, robotics.
Mm.
And then on the Saturday, we have a family day right throughout Turles then. It's just, again, to try and bring families together and actually work together doing science.
Very good. You have something that certainly struck me as very unusual, the Ugly Animal Roadshow for primary kids.
Yes, yeah. Simon Watts is coming over from the UK, and he's going to do a fantastic, he's so engaging.
Yeah.
So he does a fantastic show on ugly animals and unusual animals, but he does it in a real fun, quirky way. So we look at the jellyfish, I think he's going to look at, and it's actually been voted the ugliest animal in the world. So he's engaging children in nature, which is hugely important. We can talk about, you know, technology, engineering and maths, but also let them appreciate the world around them and actually, you know, appreciate life and make sure that they care for the environment is hugely important.
Yeah, science is such a broad church when you take all of that into account, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. You could go anywhere with it.
Yeah.
And now we have STEAM, which is after being thrown into the mix now. So that's called Science, Technology, Engineering, Art and Maths.
Whoa, that's interesting.
Yeah, so now actually in Nina Library on Wednesday, I think, we're bringing in children, and Dee Keegan from the Galway Arts Academy is going to look at Da Vinci's bridges. So Da Vinci, that years ago, designed and developed a bridge. So it's an engineering challenge, but it's also very artistic. So they're actually going to design and make bridges based on the Da Vinci model. And at the end of the day, the children are going to design an arc-shaped bookcase, and that's going to be left in the Nina Library for all the children to say, look, we built this.
Isn't that great? And I mean, that ties history and art and science and everything together.
Everything together. You know, I'm always saying, it's the old cliche, but science is everywhere.
Hmm.
Everywhere you look, there's science. There's science in history, in geography. So I think it's science, you know, we're talking about the National Science Week and we're promoting science, but we're also just promoting lifelong learning. You know, it's all about, you know, just opening your eyes, as I said before, and just getting people to think about the world.
What about the gender balance where science studies are concerned? I mean, is it still less young women are taking part? Or
it's changing.
Is it changing? Mm, yeah.
It's changing, but yes. For example, engineering courses and IT courses in colleges, of course, would love to see more females.
Mm.
You know, but at a primary level, you see a great enthusiasm from them all. Then maybe in second level, you might see a divide between biology, chemistry, and physics. You know, and that's where we really need to, I suppose, focus in on with the second level as well, to make sure that girls in particular don't fall off at that stage.
You must be an inspiration to them, because you speak so passionately about it. I mean, were you always interested in science? Was it?
Well, my background, I'm a science teacher.
Yeah.
So I trained as a science teacher in UL, and I lecture in science education in Mary Mackle College now. So we're continuously promoting science to children at primary and second level.
Mm.
and also to their parents, because that's a huge part of the piece. We need to promote it to the teachers, the parents and the children all at the same time. Yeah, I'm completely passionate about it. It's my baby, you know, so I love, I absolutely adore science.
And I mean, one of the difficulties, but I presume one of the joys as well, is the organic nature of science and that it's evolving all the time. I suppose that you're never finished with it.
No, you could just keep on learning.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, I mentioned lifelong learning, that, you know, you could go anywhere with it. You know, space is becoming a huge issue now as well. You know, there's so much to explore about space. And we have, there's National Space Week, you know, and I suppose just to plug as well, like we promote science during Science Week, Mary I, but we do, you know, we promote coding. We work with Engineers Ireland for Engineers Week, you know, we'll look at Tech Week. So we're right throughout the year, we're always promoting STEM, to children as much as we possibly can.
Excellent. If people want to find out more, Maeve, because there's so much to know about this, I presume there's a website, is there?
There is scienceweek.ie, and if you click on there, you'll find our very own Tipperary Festival of the Science page, but also a very active page, and I suppose evolving page to keep up to date with, would be our Facebook page. So it's just Tipperary Festival of Science. And then also we have a Twitter page, and it's Science Tip, it's called.
All right. And I presume if you Google Tipperary Festival of Science, there'll be a lot of information there.
Yes,
anyway.
There will be, yeah.
This is lovely to meet you, and you're so passionate about the subject. It's great to talk to somebody like that. Maeve, thanks very much.
Great. Thanks very much. And I hope you all come to the Tipperary Festival of Science to see you all.
I'm sure they will indeed.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Welcome back to TIP Today. Reading today, the public servants have escaped controversial new pension rules that delay the payment of the state pension. Now, thousands of workers, as you know, in the private sector are being forced to draw the dole as their employer compels them to leave work at the age of 65. Now, the state contributory pension is now only paid from the age of 66, forcing these retirees to claim job seekers' benefit, meaning that they're getting almost 50 euro a week less than if they were able to get their pension. However, it's revealed today that the public servants are immune to the rule change. Pensions experts said that it showed the state has one rule for its own and another for the rest. So there you go. There's a surprise to us and all of that. Now, new Amaroch research shows that most of the public are totally unaware of basic facts regarding what legalised abortion has led to in countries like our nearest neighbour of England. The research released today shows that just 6% of the public are aware that 1 in 5 pregnancies in England now end in abortion. I'm joined online now by spokesperson Mairead Fallon. Good morning to you, Mairead.
Good morning, Fran. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome indeed. First of all, can I ask you, where did you get your figures from, your percentages from, that you presented to the public?
So this poll released by Amaroch was carried out in May 2015. They're professional statisticians, and they tested a sample of over 1,000 people, of members of the Irish public, and it's a very representative and accurate sample. But as you mentioned, just 10% of the public are actually aware that 90% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome in England are actually aborted. And sadly, only 6% of the public are aware that 1 in 5 pregnancies in England end in abortion. And this really shows us that...
Sorry, Murray, but that's what I mean. Where did you get those figures from, say, that 90% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted? Where did they come from?
That is an official figure from the NHS when they look into abortion statistics. So it's a well-known fact. And there have been, many, many newspaper articles and even programmes by the BBC looking into this statistic, which, you know, sadly, 9 out of 10 babies are actually aborted, you know, who are diagnosed with Down syndrome. And there are actually similar figures in countries like Iceland, where a baby hasn't been born with Down syndrome in the last 4 years. And again, in Denmark, there's a similar figure to the UK, where 90% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb are also aborted. And I think I remember first hearing these figures, and, you know, I was really, really upset Because I'm as I'm sure many of the listeners at home, I know people with Down syndrome, and I know, you know, the love and the value they bring into the world. And it's really, really sad to see that in our, you know, in our neighbouring country in England, that 90% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb are actually being aborted.
And what do you put the lack of knowledge, as you might see it, down to, Mairead?
Well, what we see at the moment is, you know, the Oireachtas Committee is taking place examining the Eighth Amendment. But as we've seen, there are only 24 groups, or pardon, there are only four pro-life individuals and groups who have actually been invited to the committee versus 24 pro-choice groups. So it's really no surprise that the public, you know, aren't aware of these basic facts.
But you also make a claim that the media is propping up this in some way.
Yes, you know, it would seem so. I know in recent years, in 1 month alone, there were 33 pro-choice articles versus just one pro-life article. But again, I don't like to focus on the bias in the media. I don't think that is, you know, it's a pity to have to focus on that when there's such a big debate on hand. You know, we're talking about removing a basic human right from our constitution, the right to life, of a very, very vulnerable group of human
beings. Right, but are you scaring people a little bit, though? Because, I mean, it depends on what wording will replace the eighth, if that is the case, if you know what I mean.
Yes, there is a lot of talk about, you know, a partial or a full repeal of the Eighth Amendment. But what we're saying here at the Pro-Life Campaign is that, you know, there is actually no such thing as restrictive abortion. And once you say that some unborn babies are worthy of the right to life, you're essentially saying that no unborn baby has any intrinsic value. And again, just looking at experience in other countries, abortion was supposedly brought in on restrictive grounds in the UK, but now there are over 190,000 abortions taking place. And sadly, you can have an abortion in the UK through all 9 months of pregnancy for any detectable disability.
Right. So you think that this will be a slippery slope anyway, even if it's a restricted wording in some way. Is that it?
Absolutely. Because looking at experience in other countries...
Can I just ask you, because I'm just running out of time, Mairead, you believe, and if you just give me a yes or no, abortion should be illegal as far as you're concerned. Is that it?
Yes, we believe that unborn babies have a right.
And if that is the case, then what should happen to the mother? I mean, in any other case of illegality, there's a punishment. How should the mother then be punished?
It is the stance of the pro-life campaign that no woman should be punished for having an abortion.
If you see this as an illegality, there should be a consequence.
No, we believe that it's the doctors and the medical professions who should, you know, face the consequences. I mean,
and what should the consequence for them be?
Well, I at the moment, I know that there is, you know, a 14-year sentence, but again, no woman in Ireland has ever received that sentence, and it's something we do not advocate.
But in terms of a woman going to England for her abortion, it's legal in that country, but she is making the conscious decision to do so. So do you not think, going on what you're telling me, that there should be a consequence for that mother who decides, in your world, that she's taking the life of her child?
No, absolutely not. I know women who have had abortions and who have travelled to the UK, and I understand what a traumatic experience it was for them. And you know, the pro-choice campaign talks about trusting women, but I know from talking to women who have had abortions in the UK, they aren't actually shown the ultrasound scan of their baby before they have the abortion. So it's really,
These are largely bright, intelligent women. I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. They don't need to be shown an ultrasound for the graphics, if you know what I mean, Mairead, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I know crisis pregnancies can be absolutely traumatic. And I think in Ireland, you know, we respect life and we should continue to improve support for these women.
Right. But if it is illegal, do you see it as being murder?
No, I don't see it as being murder. I mean, it's not, legally speaking, abortion isn't murder.